Unveiling the secrets A-list copywriters use to make themselves and their clients millions. This is the Copywriters Podcast with your host, the world's greatest copywriting coach, David Garfinkel.
One way AI can save you from expending massive amounts of blood, sweat, and tears is a way that a lot of people really aren't using, at least not using very well. And that involves taking advantage of AI's incredible ability to analyze, find trends, and organize information. And hey, on the face of it, analyzing, finding trends, organizing information, all sounds pretty boring and hardly applicable to what we do as copywriters and business owners. But today's returning champion, Kath Riahorn, has used her impressive imagination to come up with some incredibly smart, simple, and powerful ways to use AI that are very interesting and could be useful to you as well. You probably remember Kath because her podcast, her last visit here, we called it Selling Them with Kindness, got a lot of engagement and some really heartfelt comments from listeners. Kath's business is called Kind Copy. She lives in Wales, in the UK, and she has a true family business since it employs herself, her husband, her sister, and two other team members. And what's even more impressive, they grew with organic marketing to over £1 million a month before she ever ran an ad. So now, before we dig into Kath's innovations, let's listen to something that AI would never write. Copy is powerful. You're responsible for how you use what you hear on this podcast, and most of the time, common sense is all you need. But if you make extreme claims, and or if you're writing copy for offers in highly regulated industries like health, finance, and business opportunity, you may want to get a legal review after you write and before you start using your copy. My larger clients do this all the time. So, Kath, welcome back. It's good to see you.
Thanks for having me on.
Good. Well, so I want you to share all of your techniques, but tell me, how did you start thinking about AI that led you to dive into it this way?
The truth of it was that when AI first came out, I, like lots of copywriters, tried to engage with it and found that when I used it as a creative tool, the stuff that I was getting back from it required so much prompting to get anything halfway decent that I was dismissive of it. I thought, this is crap. I also felt frustrated that I was spending so much of my time prompting a machine to create something that I didn't even find difficult in the first place. I felt like this is just such a waste of time to be coaxing this creature to do something that I could do in half the time and twice as good. So sure. I was dismissive of it, and I realized that what I actually felt was a little bit afraid of how rapidly all of my clients felt as though this was a genuine competitor to what we were doing. So the perception in my market was that they could continue to pay me a significant amount of money to do this job, or get this almost free thing that they perceived was almost as good. And the truth was that this came about initially because I think people perceived what we did as much more accessible than I perceived it to be. And that was threatening initially. So I was dismissive of it. I thought, this is a lot of rubbish. Any halfway decent writer is never going to be using this tool. This is great if you can't, you know, you wouldn't know good copy if it fell on your foot. But I actually was really wrong about that. And what I realized was all of the time and effort I was pouring into prompting probably was a waste of time, in all honesty, but it was because I was trying to make the robot do a creative thing, which isn't what they're great at. And instead, when I used it to assimilate a huge amount of my information, it was actually boss. It was so good at that. So rather than it give me the creativity and then I tidy it up, which seemed like the recommendation when it was first out, what I have found is that if I can give it original content, voice notes, assets, transcripts are absolutely killer. Transcripts are awesome. Where I am actually giving it my own inputs, and then telling it pull together ideas in whatever, there's so many combinations of ways that you can do this, but I give it the input and then use the AI the way it's, I mean, amazingly natural at assimilate, organize, look for patterns, find instances of those sorts of maybe more mechanical behaviors. It is absolutely killer at that. And then it becomes a really valuable thinking partner.
Yeah, that's excellent. So let me unpack that. A lot of things there. I think a lot of people look, even to this day, they look at AI like that genie in the magic lamp. You just rub it and it creates whatever you want, even if you don't have a pretty clear picture of what you want. Of course, you know that's not true. I mean, every writer who tried it and was frustrated realized that's not true. The way I look at it is as a blank slate that can create, but it needs data and it needs guidance. But what you said is something it can do much more immediately. It can assimilate and organize and present stuff. I also think that was 2023, I think 2022, 2023, when ChatGPT 2.0 came out, and today we're living in very different worlds, but it still requires a lot more. It's like this. It's like, if you already know how to write copy and you can learn how to use AI, you can use AI to really multiply your productivity, your creativity, your output. If you don't know how to write copy, AI is not going to save you. You've still got to learn those, because there are questions of judgment and there's, you know, questions of experience and reference point. Anyway, this is way off topic of what we're talking about today, but I wanted to answer some of the questions that you implicitly raised because I thought they were really good.
Yeah, it's an incredible tool. And I think one of the things, this is actually an ironic thing that I did more recently, is that I worked with an AI, I think it was ChatGPT I used for this, to say, when there has been an innovative leap forward in technology, give me any examples where that has not been readily adopted. So we had Betamax. And other than that, we were struggling to come up with any sort of like leap forward in innovation where it wasn't adopted or adapted in some way. So what I learned from that was, the next time some technological advancement comes along, I'm going to stop resisting it as quickly as I humanly can, because there are almost no instances where we don't have a big leap forward and we don't run with it as a species. So that was my own ignorance and fear, I think, that was holding me back. But it was helpful to see, you know, does this ever happen? Do we ever sort of take a step backwards and say, no, thank you? And the answer is no, almost never.
Well, that was an interesting exploration you did. And a really good point. I mean, to me, the question is, where are you on the adoption curve? Are you a visionary, early adopter, early majority? You cross the chasm. This is Jeff Moore's model of technology adoption. And, you know, he's a Silicon Valley business philosopher. Well, let's get down to what you're doing, because that's what fascinates me so much. Transcripts. What do you do with transcripts, voice notes?
Personally, I create a massive amount of content every single day. Voice notes with clients, podcasts that I do, YouTube transcripts that I have consumed, and other people's content, not necessarily mine, that I've watched and enjoyed and I want to come back to, maybe real content that I've assumed so I can assimilate a client voice. I take all of those transcripts, and probably the three that I use most often are podcasts, trainings, and consultation calls. So that's all my original content. I download the transcript because I record them on otter.ai. And then I keep them on my desktop so that I have got a resource to come back to. One of the most valuable ways that I then go on to use that is, say, take a transcript of a podcast I've been on, and the prompt is so basic. It's literally, what smart things did I say in this conversation that have got the most originality, that is a disruptive idea, that runs contrary to what common thinking is, that has got the most top, middle, and bottom of funnel appeal? Where have I presented a genuinely unique idea? Or maybe where have I presented an idea that I haven't talked about very much and needs to be examined. I recently gave my AI all of the podcast transcripts of public appearances that I have made this year, and I asked it to compare those with our brand mission statement. And I said, where am I inconsistent? Where have I said anything in public that isn't completely aligned with this mission statement? And I was relieved to find that doesn't exist anywhere. And if anything, you go further and deeper than you do in this written document. So using it as a barometer of, am I on brand? Am I continuing to show up in public on brand as a, you know, as a founder? That was a useful exercise recently.
Oh, that's interesting. And that was courageous. I mean, you don't want the AI flunking you for not being on brand, right?
Absolutely. Using the AI as a comparative tool is actually super interesting. So one of the ways that I have found this valuable recently was, here's an article that I wrote. Please take a look at this and tell me where in this mishmash of ideas, how much of this content is genuinely my unique IP? So you'll find when you do this exercise, there are certain ideas that you come back to over and over again, certain common themes that you find yourself repeating. From our last conversation, it's things like, we won't twist the knife. Those sort of like soundbite statements. Here's an article I wrote. Which of these are genuinely my unique ideas? And which of them have I sort of accidentally absorbed from other people and not properly credited? Because absolute pet hate of mine, where people have picked up a soundbite that they've heard from somewhere else, half absorbed it, and then not given proper credit to the author or the person who tweeted it or whatever, because that robs them of the opportunity to have that fantastic relationship. Like, that's how you and I started talking in the first place. So I heard this idea, I really resonate with this part of it, and I would go even further. What that allows you to do is to build on ideas and share ideas with other leaders in your space, which I think is incredibly valuable outside of an examination tool of your own ideas, but also in terms of meeting cool people and having high-level conversations about stuff you care about.
That's great. So often I've used Otter AI too, and I actually like Descript better for transcripts now. But one of the things about a transcript is it's just, I mean, even if there's nice line spacing, you know, it's just one long, you know, endless stream of words. You found ways to handle that with AI, yeah?
Yeah, and the simplest way is you upload the transcript as a TXT file and simply ask it, read this document and organize it into subheadings that make it easy to skim read. So even if you don't even intend to send that to the client after the call or the consultation or whatever it was that call was about, you've got it for your own records, just as a reminder of almost bullet points. These are the things we talked about. And actually, as a source material, that becomes really useful then for things like short form content, where you can repurpose that into tweets and schedule them, or, you know, develop a LinkedIn post, or even use it for your own practice and think, what are the common threads and patterns that come up when I have conversations with clients or prospects or colleagues in this space? What are the emotional beats in the market right now that you can see really plainly when it's written as headings?
Oh, that's great. That's great. So not everyone is a clear, linear, curated communicator. People have a lot in their mind sometimes, and they aren't shy about sharing all of it. And sometimes it's kind of hard to make sense of what they want. How do you use AI to deal with that issue?
Yeah, this is probably one of the secret use cases that I think everybody keeps under their hat. I love written communication with my clients. I prefer asynchronous comms. I don't want to be on meetings all day. And when someone starts voice noting me or giving me verbal instructions, my brain just switches off. I've started thinking about something else and I've missed half of it. When it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a Friday and you've got client communication to go through, whether that's in your Discord channel or Slack, if it's in your voice notes, in your WhatsApp, I'm European, so we use a lot of WhatsApp over here, the mishmash of communication can get in your head. one of the most effective that I will never admit to any of my clients is that I just copy and paste the conversation into an AI and say, right, what are they asking me? This is such a jump around jumble of ideas. It's important that I've got all the key points, that I've addressed all of their worries and concerns, that I've got a clear list of questions, strip out all the fluff, all the dross, all the crap, and just give me a list of questions and make sure I haven't missed anything. So, and then I'll answer them and say, have I covered everything they wanted to know? Because by then my brain is fried. And that's been a really useful one. Saved me a couple of times.
Is it hard to find the exact wording for the prompt, or does the AI kind of get it when you ask it to do that?
In my experience, talking to the AI, the most effective way to do this, I think, has become voice notes. So asking it a question the way that I would ask you a question. And what it's helped me to do is think in a linear way. So I've got a bit of a bumblebee brain. I can be all over the place. I've got ADHD and I'll hop from idea to idea. But I've got team members who are very process driven, particularly the non-writers. So the people who are in more technical roles, they love a sequential set of instructions, which is almost impossible for me to do. I'm like, I don't know what the start and finish of this task is. I have no idea. If you ask me to do something, you give me a process, I'm like, disregard. I just tell me what the end result should be and I will get there eventually, but I'll get there the way I want to get there. They love the process. And what's been amazing for me as a boss, it feels weird saying that, but like as a founder, when I communicate with my team, especially those people who are more process-driven, it has helped me to think in a linear fashion because I talk to it like a little intern. So because it's quite patient while you give it instructions, you can iterate on the instructions to it. And then it almost gives you the skill of thinking, right, what's the first thing they need to do when I speak to my team members? So that's human-to-human communication. But because you don't feel silly or foolish as a founder doing that with your team member, you can practice almost with an AI. And I have found that's been a useful sort of almost leadership skill that I've been, you know, I'm very much learning to be a boss of a business. And it's been a really useful leadership skill for me to think, this is the sequence of things that we do things in.
So have you tried, of course you can just dictate like voice notes into ChatGPT, but there's another one. It's the little curvy thing at the very right hand bottom of the context window where you can have a conversation with it.
And oh no, I've never tried that.
Oh, you got it. Oh, that is, it is so robust.
And
I don't know. Let's go a little nonlinear. See if I can do it. This may be a little like chewing gum and walking at the same time. Not sure I can do it. Okay. Hi there.
Hey there, how's it going? What's on your mind today?
So I'm here with Kath. Would you say hello to Kath, please?
Of course. Hi, Kath. It's lovely to meet you. How are we doing today?
Well, hi, nice to meet you.
she says, hi, nice to meet you. I'm hearing her through my headphones. So she's over in Wales and I'm in San Francisco. That's quite a distance, isn't it?
It sure is. That's amazing that we can chat like this from so far away. Technology's pretty awesome, right?
Awesome. That's right. Okay, I got to go. We got to get back to our podcast, but I thought I'd bring you in as a surprise guest.
I'm honored to be a surprise guest. Thanks for having me and have fun with your podcast. Talk to you both later.
Bye. So that's really cool. And one guy that I follow his podcast, his name is Nate B. Jones. He's incredibly technically aware and very clear. He's kind of speaking to enterprise people and people on the tech side, but I can follow him and I'm not either of those things. He said he used that particular mode to talk through a book he wants to write about AI. I mean, it has all of the powers of this podcast is about what you're doing. I had to stop here, but
that's cool. No, that, do you know what? That actually does tie in pretty well to what I'm doing because one of my favorite use cases of AI is something that I do every single week on a Saturday. I am an avid note taker. And I think I spoke to you about this before, about how the real value in AI is giving it genuinely human created content and then getting it to deal with the volume of content you've given it. I'm an avid note taker and I take obsessive Apple notes in my phone. That's my journal. Mm-hmm. At the end of the week on a Saturday morning, I export all of my journal notes into a Google Doc. So I have that going back to about March now. And I have recently learned that if you also have a sub one for the month, that's helpful as well. Giving the AI the journal notes and asking it to look for patterns of productivity and happiness and relationships, and where does my marriage need attention? Where does my work need attention? What am I ignoring? What plates have I stopped spinning? What was I excited about last month that I've kind of ignored? That kind of conversation is something that I do every week to align myself to a productive and happy business. I've been doing that now since March, but I didn't know that it had that conversational mode on it. So I could imagine, like, this is basically my Saturday morning as I sit with a coffee and I have, you know, 2 hours of chat with my pal, GPT. That's a perfect use case for this exact exercise. Let's unpack the week.
Oh, that's great. I can't wait to hear how it works for you. You know, there's one kind of personal thing that you offered to share regarding your mom. And I'd love it if you would. Would you care to?
Yeah, I'd love to do that. And I think this is going to be really valuable for anybody who has got an aging parent or perhaps is in a carer role or has got a young kid. My mother is 80 this month. And last March or April, she had two massive heart attacks. And it was really touch and go. It was quite scary at the time. It obviously required a lot of change in our lives. So I've got my sister who works in the business and I've got two nieces. There is a family group chat with the four of us where we daily update how she's doing. And this is just a really casual log of her mood and what she's eaten and how, you know, how her medicine is. It's really mundane, normal medical life stuff. One of the most valuable, potentially life-saving use cases of AI for me is once a month, I export that group chat as a TXT file. Feed it to ChatGPT, and I ask it to log a timeline of her mood, her health, her physical health, specific symptoms. And I ask it, give me a timeline of dates and specific attributions on who said what. So from the group chat, because everybody's got a name attached in the group chat, you can see, you know, certain patterns of worry coming from my sister, or certain patterns of interventions and practical support given by my niece, for example. And that's been super useful in terms of, should we have a conversation about water pills? Should we go back to the nurse and speak to them about this pattern? And the reason why I think that's such a valuable thing is because it's timestamped. So if there's ever an instance, God forbid, hope I never, ever have to use that document ever. But if there is ever a need to show, here's a trend, here's basically the patterns from the last 12 months of her care, her mood, her attitude, what's going well, what's not going so well, who she spent time with, how does who she spends time with affect her mood, and how can we get her among people who lift her more often? Things like that are the sorts of interactions that you can have when you've got this massive amount of data, especially when you're still in it. Like, the reason why an AI is so valuable for this is because there's just four of us. And when you have these potentially quite emotional conversations as a family, you can over-report the negative and you can dwell. And because there's four of you and you're so close, you end up sort of negatively spiraling around an issue that perhaps you're overly concerned about. So, like, is this really something to worry about? It's such a valuable, powerful question.
I went through something so similar 4 years ago. There were essentially four of us, family or para-family members, and my mom, she didn't have a heart problem. She had dementia, and it was, you know, it led to her death. And you're right. You get so in it, you cannot step back and take a look, and even to have the AI be a second brain to say, well, here's what happened, and this looks like when you do this, this will happen, and you might get a better outcome. And it's all laid out for you in the document. I think that's wonderful. I think it's great.
It's reassuring, actually, because it's so non-emotional. My dad had Alzheimer's and died from that. And I wish we had had something like this at the time, because we were tracking things like, you know, he's disappeared, he's gone missing, he's lost his car, things like that. And you can read, you can get so bogged down in the negativity and the worry while it's live that you lose, you completely lose perspective on, is this getting worse or are we just tired?
I'm going to add to that because it's also applicable to client work. A lot of times when we're caught up in our emotions, we're seeing things through our emotions, we kind of get a myopic view of what's going on. And a lot of times with client work, we can get caught up in our emotions. We can get caught up in what's going on in our life. We can have something triggered on a call that sends us down a mental path, and we'll end up missing things there as well. So the real world example of this, and then also how you tied it into what you've been doing with your client work, it, having a non-emotional analytical framework to re-examine things through, both in personal life and in client work, is just an amazing tool. And I definitely think that not enough of us are using it that way yet.
I would say so. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been a real, it's strange to say, but it's been very comforting in that respect because it's so measured and it's not overly reactive. One thing I do worry about with that is it can become a bit of a yes man if you're, I don't know if you've noticed, but it can stoke you up a little bit too much sometimes. And I don't know, Nathan, if you've got any tips on how to train the thing to give me, I mean, I've told it, don't just ego stroke me. Tell me if, you know, tell me if I've dropped the ball. Tell me if it's me. Please do tell me. But what beyond instructing it, have you found a way?
What I've noticed is it'll gas you up. It'll treat you like a needy boyfriend who's afraid to disappoint you. And so generally what I do is I instruct it. I say, hey, don't just tell me what I want to hear. Push back. Let me know if there's anything that I'm missing. And just that right there. Don't tell me what I want to hear. Push back and let me know if there's anything that I'm missing. Usually it'll push it back into the, okay, I'm not afraid to offend you. But I think it's just the nature of humans. We're all so afraid of being offended nowadays that the people that programmed it were like, don't offend people because they won't come back and use it. So you have to instruct it. Hey, it's okay to offend me.
Yeah, I'm not going to melt. That's as far as I've been able to get with it as well. Don't blow smoke, essentially. But sometimes it gives you quite an attractive view of whatever you're talking about. And then I'm not sure if I'm like, this makes me feel pretty good. I feel like I'm doing pretty good. But yeah, it's been a game changer. Like implementing it like this as a soundboard once a week, almost like a medical account once a month, and a daily assimilate all these ideas for me and pull together all these threads on the daily. That's probably been the most effective cadence that I've found this year, certainly.
That's very good. Thank you so much. You really took my mind to a different place with what you're saying. I thought this was kind of going to be a laundry list and it'd be interesting and useful, but this is quite an exploration of human consciousness, actually. And one thing I was thinking is that feeling people, and a lot of writers are feeling people. We think we need more feeling people in our lives, but maybe what we need is more analytical people who won't attack us for being feeling people. And and you can certainly use the AI in that way.
Before we're out of here, Kath, if people want to connect with you, maybe follow you, what is the best place to do that?
You can find me on Instagram at KindCopyUK, or you can find me on X at KindCopy.
All right. I recently followed you on Instagram. Great follow. We will make sure to include both links in the show notes for this episode. If you enjoyed this episode, if you want to find more about Kath, you can find that over at copywriterspodcast.com. And until next time, we will catch you later.
Catch you later. And thanks again, Kath.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, if you enjoyed today's podcast, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app so we can get into ears of more listeners. Thank you.